Welcome, I'm Ethan Elkind, and this is Your Calls One Planet series. Nearly 5 years ago, Governor Gavin Newsom here in California took executive action to stop the sale of new polluting gas-powered vehicles and move to fully zero-emission vehicle sales by the year 2035. The plan also includes transitioning all medium and heavy-duty trucks in the state to be zero-emission by the year 2045. But in recent months, Republicans in Congress and the Trump administration have moved aggressively to undermine environmental protections, rolling back key provisions of the Clean Air Act, phasing out clean energy tax credits, and cutting funding for electric vehicles and renewable energy. And just last week, EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin announced that the agency plans to eliminate the 2009 finding that greenhouse gases endanger public health or welfare. And that finding was in response to a Supreme Court decision that essentially required the agency to make that finding. Now, in addition, EPA has proposed to repeal all of its greenhouse gas standards for cars and trucks. So given all of this federal policy action, what does the future look like for California's transition to zero emission transportation and efforts to combat pollution and slow climate change? So to start us off, we're going to take a look at EPA's plan to scrap its landmark finding that enabled the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to regulate greenhouse gas emissions. And these repeal of these standards could have a large impact on the highly polluting transportation sector, especially here in California. So we're to discuss what is going on with this endangerment finding, we're joined by Emily Pontecorvo, founding staff writer at Heatmap, a new media organization focused on climate change and the energy transition. Previously, she was a staff writer at the nonprofit outlet Grist, where she covered all aspects of decarbonization from clean energy to electrified buildings to carbon dioxide removal. Good to have us with you, Emily.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And I know we've just got you for a few minutes here to talk about the endangerment findings, so let's get right to it. So this recent announcement by EPA has stirred strong reactions from environmental advocates and particularly from the scientific community. So just to start us off, can you explain exactly what the endangerment finding is, how it came about, and why it's so important?
Yeah, so the endangerment finding is a determination that the Environmental Protection Agency made in 2009. And as you mentioned in your introduction, this kind of came after a very seminal court case called Massachusetts versus EPA, where the Supreme Court came down and said, greenhouse gases are pollutants as defined by the Clean Air Act, and the Clean Air Act should cover them. But the Supreme Court didn't say that means EPA has to regulate them. It said, okay, because these are considered pollutants as the Clean Air Act defines them, EPA, you need to look at, you know, do these pollutants endanger public health and welfare? And if so, you do have a duty to regulate them. And so in 2009, EPA, based on overwhelming scientific evidence, made that determination, said greenhouse gases do endanger public health and welfare. And that kind of prompted the first set of national greenhouse gas regulations for cars.
And important to note that that happened once President Obama took office, because the George W. Bush administration was not in a hurry to make that finding. Is that right?
Right, exactly.
And so what is the significance? What is this endangerment finding, what does it form the basis of in terms of regulatory action? How does that particularly affect transportation?
Well, so it basically, you know, as I just said, it gives EPA a duty to regulate the greenhouse gas emissions from transportation. And then the agency kind of later on extended that argument and created greenhouse gas regulations for power plants and for other sources. And in this endangerment finding, you know, it's purely a scientific kind of justification. They don't look at, you know, what is the cost of regulating. They just say, you know, greenhouse gases have these particular risks to human health, and therefore we should be regulating them. And then kind of downstream, when they made those rules later on, they, you know, considered all kinds of other factors in terms of deciding how they were going to actually develop the rules.
And how significant are the greenhouse gas emission standards for motor vehicles specifically? Because we have had fuel economy standards in the United States since the 1970s, basically. So how important are these greenhouse gas standards and how do they work when it comes to motor vehicles?
Oh, you might be testing my my knowledge a little bit on that. I mean, the fuel economy standards, as you mentioned, they regulate, you know, how efficient a vehicle can be. The greenhouse gas standards specifically look at the greenhouse gas emissions across a automaker's fleet of vehicles. So their model year 2024 vehicles, all the vehicles that year, what kind of emission reductions the automaker needs to achieve. So kind of each year over time, they get stricter and stricter. And the most recent regulations that the Biden administration have passed would have eventually put us on a path to zero emission vehicles.
So this is a big deal to have the endangerment finding potentially overturned. Of course, there's a regulatory process that I do want to ask you about in terms of what's coming next. But this would then undermine the greenhouse gas standards that the federal government has on tailpipe emissions. But what is the next step now in terms of just making this finding? I mean, this is just an announcement that this sort of new rulemaking is going forward. Can you talk a little bit about what's next here for the EPA in trying to rescind this finding?
This is the first step in what I think is going to be a very long road, and your listeners will be hearing about this finding a lot probably for the next several years. So the first thing that's going to happen is they'll publish the rule, the proposed rule in the Federal Register. That'll start a clock where the public has a certain amount of time, I can't remember if it's 60 or 90 days to comment on the proposal. And then the EPA will have to go through all of those comments and respond to them. And so it could take another, you know, year or longer after that before the agency finally comes out with its final rule, which will respond to all the comments and, you know, say once and for all whether it whether greenhouse gases endanger public health. And then after it issues that final rule, very quickly we're going to see environmental groups and others, probably states, challenge the rule in court. And then we've got several years probably of court challenges ahead after that.
And Emily, how, given the state of climate science, I mean, this is settled science, how is the agency going to pull this off that the greenhouse gases don't endanger public health?
Yeah, so their primary justification that they spell out in their proposal that came out last week is not about science. It's basically that they're arguing that the Clean Air Act is designed to target air pollution that endangers public health through local or regional exposure. So, you know, the kind of common air pollutants that we think of, like particulate matter and ozone. They argue that the Clean Air Act covers those, and that because greenhouse gases, our concerns about them are more based on kind of the global climate change that they create, that they are not covered by the Clean Air Act. And, you know, as far as I know, and you might know better than me on this, like that question was litigated in Massachusetts versus EPA. But that is the question. I mean, that is the argument that they're making. But then they also, in this proposal, they offer kind of a laundry list of other arguments in case that one doesn't work. They talk about how the EPA should have considered kind of the costs to society of regulating greenhouse gas emissions when they made the finding. They try to poke holes in the science to some extent, you know, saying the EPA should have weighed the potential benefits of global warming. And, you know, they talk about how if we do regulate greenhouse gas emissions from vehicles, it will only have such a small impact on the global climate that it wouldn't be worth it.
And Emily, in terms of your reporting on this, do you have a sense of what EPA and the Trump administration's end game is here? I mean, is it just to try to undermine the greenhouse gas emission standards? Is there something else they're sort of planning here with the, you know, sort of assuming this is going to go to the Supreme Court? Of course, it may not. But as you mentioned, there's a lot of litigation here. Or is this just sort of a flood the zone, you know, roll everything back that we possibly can when it comes to environmental protections?
This is a really interesting question. I think it's a question that a lot of the sources I talk to have. People are is kind of baffled by the decision to do this, because a lot of, you know, major polluters even have asked the EPA not to do this, because it puts them potentially at risk of litigation from states. And that's kind of a whole other separate question. But, you know, the one theory that I've heard is that they want to take this all the way to overturning Massachusetts versus EPA, which would kind of say once and for all, greenhouse gases are not pollutants under the Clean Air Act. And if they can do that, then that gets the federal government out of having to set any kind of regulations for greenhouse gases across any sector.
And as you mentioned, that also affects power plants, not the subject of our show today, but some wide-ranging consequences here. Well, Emily Pontecorvo, right, founding staff writer at HeatMap, I just want to thank you for coming on and explaining what's going on with this endangerment finding rollback. This is complicated legalese stuff, but you've explained it really helpfully for our listeners. So thank you so much for joining us on Your Calls One Planet series.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And now I want to introduce two experts on zero emission transportation for a deeper dive into what's been going on when it comes to zero emission vehicles. First, I want to welcome Ken Alex, Director of Project Climate at UC Berkeley Center for Law, Energy, and the Environment, where he is my colleague there. Previously to joining CLE, Center for Law, Energy, and the Environment, he spent 8 years as a senior policy advisor to former California Governor Jerry Brown. He was also the director of the Governor's Office of Planning and Research and chair of the state's Strategic Growth Council, focusing on climate, environment, and land use issues. Good to have you back with us, Ken.
Thanks for having me, Ethan. Good morning.
Good morning to you. And I also want to introduce David Reichmuth. He's a senior engineer in the Clean Transportation Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. His work focuses on analyzing new vehicle technologies and advocating for policies that support the increased electrification of transportation. David, thank you for joining us. Good to have you back with us.
Yeah, Ethan, thanks for having me back.
So Ken, let me start with you. We just heard from Emily about this proposed repeal of the endangerment finding. Can you talk about how you see what's at stake here if this endangerment finding is rolled back, and specifically in terms of our efforts to decarbonize transportation?
Sure. Emily did a real nice job of laying out the issues. I want to start one step back to remind people that the EPA stands for Environmental Protection Agency. It's a rather shocking situation where the protection agency is more concerned with what they describe as the cost of regulation than of actually protecting people and the environment. So what effect this will have is really a little bit unknown at this point. First of all, as Emily nicely laid out, this process takes a period of years. And until that process comes to an end, the EPA continues to have the obligation to regulate greenhouse gas emissions from vehicles. And California, even though some of its authority has been undercut, continues to have authority to regulate emissions from vehicles. So we'll have to see what the overall impact is, but certainly some of the impact is really creating uncertainty for automakers. They've made billions of dollars of investments in electric vehicles, but if you can undermine the ability to sell electric vehicles, then those auto companies have to rethink their investments. So there's a fair amount of uncertainty here. The regulations continue. They will for a while, but I'm sure we'll see additional attempts by the Trump administration to disrupt that.
Yeah, and there's a lot for us to talk about because a lot has happened even beyond this endangerment finding, but just staying on this topic for another minute here, David, I wanted to ask you the same question. When you look at what the administration is doing in terms of repealing the endangerment finding, which underpins the greenhouse gas standards for vehicles, what exactly is at stake? And, you know, how do these greenhouse gas standards work in concert with the fuel economy standards, as I asked Emily?
Yeah, I mean, so when you look at the the repeal of the rules and the endangerment finding. You know, if you look at California, transportation is about half of the emissions, the climate changing emissions in California, if you put together the vehicles plus refining and oil production. And passenger vehicles are over half of transportation emissions in the state. So there's really no way to address climate change without addressing passenger vehicles. It's just not possible. And so this is, you know, this is a really bad policy in terms of, as Ken and Emily laid out, in terms of from environmental protection. And when you pair that with the change in the vehicle efficiency standards, where they didn't repeal the efficiency standards at the federal level, they just removed all penalty for not complying. Mm-hmm. You know, there's essentially at the federal level, we're going to take away all control over limitations on the emissions from vehicles. And that's just puts us on a path to, instead of where we need to be doing, is sort of getting to, you know, zero emissions, is to increase emissions from transportation. And it does create incredible uncertainty. You know, I think part of that uncertainty, you know, is the action of the Trump administration. We did have Toyota and GM and some other automakers lobbying Congress to repeal California's waiver to enforce these standards. So I think that some of the auto companies definitely contributed to this uncertainty by pushing for the repeal of these standards.
And I'm glad you mentioned, David, this rollback. I mean, it's not really a rollback of the fuel economy standards. What it is, as you mentioned, it's basically zeroing out any penalties. So automakers who are no longer producing fuel efficient vehicles, not in compliance with federal standards on this, now will face $0 in penalty. What are the implications of that going to be in your view?
Well, we've already seen some of the automakers talk about how they are going to ramp up production of some of their largest vehicles. So I think, you know, GM talking about investing in the next generation of V8 engines and other companies taking similar action. So what we're seeing is automakers, domestic automakers for this market, looking at sort of investing in yesterday's technologies. It's going to increase their profit margins in the short term. It's going to mean fewer choices, fewer efficient choices for buyers in California and the US. And you know, it really takes us in the wrong direction, and it puts us out of sync with the rest of the world. You know, I mean, I think we're focusing on the environmental and climate change impacts, which is absolutely vital. But everything that the Congress and the Trump administration are doing is also just bad economic policy. The rest of the world is making this transition to electric vehicles. We had investments during the last administration. We're now throwing away those investments and giving manufacturers in other part of the world a big leg up, and we're going to get left behind if we don't take action. I mean, I see this as sort of like, you know, if you look at the space race, you know, if we saw the launch of Sputnik by the Soviets and said like, hey, we're going to ban any research in rocketry and we're going to invest everything in the federal level into steam locomotives. And mm-hmm. That's kind of where we are.
Yeah, doubling down on last century's technology. So if you're just joining us, I'm Ethan Elkind, and this is Your Calls One Planet series. We're talking about the future of zero emission transportation in California. We're joined by Ken Alex, Director of Project Climate at UC Berkeley Law School's Center for Law, Energy, and the Environment. And he was formerly a senior policy advisor to Governor Jerry Brown in California here. We're also joined by David Reichmuth, senior engineer in the Clean Transportation Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. And we want to hear from you as well, our listeners. Do you drive an electric vehicle and are worried about what might happen going forward? Or are you interested in potentially buying an electric vehicle or another zero emission vehicle? There are hydrogen fuel cell vehicles as well. And are these rollbacks affecting your thinking about going electric for your vehicle? The number to call to join the conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email us with your thoughts about what's happening at the federal level and maybe what you think California should do in response to your call at kalw.org. Ken, I just asked David about the rollback of the fuel economy standards or the undermining of the fuel economy standards. What is your take on what's happening here? I mean, without greenhouse gas standards on zero emission vehicle or on any motor vehicle, and with essentially $0 in penalties for automakers who don't comply with fuel economy standards for their gas engines, what does this mean for California and our ability to reduce pollution and meet our climate goals?
Well, first off, I agree with pretty much everything that David said, but I do want to suggest that there's some real risk for automakers, part of which David touched on, which is they're not going to be competitive around the world. And of course, automakers, even in the U.S., want to sell autos elsewhere. And meanwhile, the Chinese are moving forward much more rapidly than we are. But I do want to point out a legal vulnerability for automakers. California has a law that's called the Unfair Business Practices Act, something sometimes called 17200, just because that's the statutory provision. It probably allows the state of California to sue automakers if they fail to follow fuel efficiency standards, and then use California law that I just mentioned, the Unfair Business Practices Act, to get very substantial penalties under California law. So there may be an interesting play here if automakers really are going to thumb their noses at fuel efficiency standards, and they may risk significant penalties in the state of California. I'm hoping that California, current administration, the Newsom administration, and whoever becomes governor next, after the 2026 election, really want to double down on California's efforts to ensure that there's really good infrastructure for electric vehicles, charging stations that are available quite broadly, perhaps increasing incentives for auto purchases of electric vehicles, and then really maybe pursuing technology advances and things like battery technology, where currently China is well ahead. Having said all that, I share David's concerns and all of the issues that he raised as well.
Ken, I'm glad you brought up the idea of a lawsuit, because one of the interesting potential consequences of rolling back the endangerment finding and the idea that the federal government is going to be regulating greenhouse gases because of their role endangering the public health under the Clean Air Act is that according to the Supreme Court, a decision back in 2011 took up the field against any sort of nuisance lawsuits that polluters should be held accountable for the climate damage that they cause. And the Supreme Court's argument back then was that if the federal government is going to regulate greenhouse gas emissions, then people can't sue a polluter based on climate damages. And I'm wondering now, if with this rollback, and I believe you were involved in that case when you were at the California Attorney General's office, what does this mean in terms of opening up other litigation avenues beyond the one you just cited with 17200 lawsuits?
Yes, I actually was the attorney representing the state of California in the case that you mentioned. The case is called Connecticut versus AEP. Seven states and the city of New York had sued a number of the largest operators of power plants, coal-fired power plants, under an unusual theory, something called federal common law, which is pretty unusual, but actually exists where there's pollution that crosses state lines. And climate change, greenhouse gases are a good example of that kind of pollution. So the Supreme Court said the Clean Air Act basically occupies the field, and because the Clean Air Act involves regulation of greenhouse gases, as we said in Massachusetts versus EPA, you cannot sue under a federal common law theory. You can only sue under the Clean Air Act. Well, as you note, if the Clean Air Act doesn't regulate greenhouse gases, then those lawsuits are going to come back. We had an additional lawsuit when Jerry Brown was attorney general just before he became governor, California versus General Motors, saying that General Motors and other automakers knew that the cars that they were creating and producing actually were contributing significantly to climate change and to the impacts of climate change in California. I think it's very likely that we'll see a return to that litigation and probably litigation from other states as well. So it's not a simple open field for the Trump administration to do what they want. And I think that's why, as Emily mentioned, that a lot of companies actually are not too thrilled about the idea that this endangerment finding might be going away.
Yeah, so a potential silver lining or opportunity here for those who still care about climate action and want to see cleaner vehicles and less pollution. We have a lot more to talk about here on Your Calls One Planet series in terms of zero emission transportation. Our guests, Ken Alex from UC Berkeley Center for Law, Energy, and the Environment Director of Project Climate, and David Reichmuth, Senior Engineer at the Union of Concerned Scientists, will be staying with us for the rest of this hour. So stay with us. We'll be back just after this short break. Welcome back. For those of you joining us just now, I'm Ethan Elkind. This is Your Calls One Planet series. We're podcasting the show, and you can find out more information on our website. Go to kalw.org, click on news, and you'll see Your Call listed there. And you can also listen to our past shows there. And if you have a show idea for us, please do let us know. You can email us at yourcall@kalw.org or call us at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. And we want to hear from you. We're talking about the future of zero emission transportation in California. Are you an EV driver, or are you considering getting an EV and concerned about what these changes in federal policies might mean for you? Do you have thoughts about what California should do in response to the federal rollback of support for zero emission vehicles? We'd love to hear from you. The number again is 866-798-8255. Talk. That's 866-798-8255. And we're joined for the rest of this show, as we were at the beginning of the program as well, by Ken Alex, Director of Project Climate at UC Berkeley Law School Center for Law, Energy, and the Environment, and David Reichmuth, Senior Engineer in the Clean Transportation Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. And we do have a caller, Greg in Palo Alto, dialing in. Greg, welcome to Your Calls One Planet series.
Hopefully I can make several points here quickly. One is I'm very interested in driving an electric vehicle, but I'm priced out. I mean, even the subsidies that I qualify for wouldn't allow me to buy an electric vehicle. So that's one thing, and I think that's probably true for a number of people in the state. They might want to drive one, but they can't afford it, even if they could get the subsidies. Secondly, the Chinese are producing an electric vehicle, which is very reliable and would really probably just dwarf the sales of American automakers. I'd love to be able to see what this car looks like, because if you look at the electric vehicles that are sold in the United States, they have every bell and whistle and technology you can imagine. And that's one of the reasons I think they're so pricey. It's too bad that there's not some automaker in the United States who produces a really basic EV, okay, that would be affordable for people to drive. Thirdly, public transportation is really part of the solution to this. We need a much more robust public transportation system. And lastly, this is all the people with you know that this is a huge problem. We're not moving in the right direction. And, you know, if Gavin Newsom wasn't a corporate Democrat, he might just declare a state of emergency with regard to environment and just say, we are going to make California a clean state. And this is how we're going to do it. He's probably got the authority, and he's going to run up against the federal government. But that's the way it goes.
All right, Greg. Well, thank you for making all those points. A lot of interesting points there to discuss. David Regmuth, I wanted to start with you because I'm sure you have a lot to say in response to Greg's point about pricing and the availability of some of these Chinese electric vehicles as well.
Yeah, there's some really great points there. And so, you know, I think we do need lower cost EVs. If you look at, though, new cars, just gasoline and electric, they've gone up about $10,000 on average since the pandemic. And so cars are just more expensive right now, just for whether it's gasoline or electric. But we do need lower cost EVs. And part of how we get there is one is sort of making more EVs and requiring more EVs from the manufacturers. And that is that would put downward pressure on the prices. Right now, if you take away all the regulations, all the rules, what we're going to get is a handful probably of luxury EVs. And no, you know, and very few EVs that address sort of the lower end of the new car market. And that's part of the problem of removing these regulations is sort of, gets rid of the requirements for the manufacturers to bring volume to the car dealerships. And, you know, and the problem we have is that there's a relatively few number of manufacturers and models available. If you want to go into a Honda dealership and you say, you know, you don't get the choice of saying like, I want a electric Civic. If Honda doesn't make it and they don't, you don't have that option. And so that's why we need those sort of the regulatory push to get them into that, you know, the mass market part of it. You know, I think we talked about earlier about like how industrial policy is important here is that we've taken away a lot of these, incentives for the domestic manufacturers, which is going to put us behind China. They are making cheaper vehicles and that are reliable and affordable, you know, and it's not just me saying that. That's what the CEO of Ford came back from a trip from China and said, that they are ahead of us. And yet we're going to be moving backwards here in the US. And the last thing I'll just mention is that there was the talk about transit, and that's definitely important. You know, if we can reduce the need to have a vehicle, that also makes it easier and cheaper for people to get around.
Well, and of course, buses are electric and could rely on batteries. So this conversation is definitely much broader than just passenger vehicles. David, I have to ask you just a follow up on this point you've made that, you know, the automakers are facing competition from Chinese electric vehicle makers. So why are they backing these rollbacks? As you mentioned, the CEO of Ford has said the future is electric and we need to keep pace with China, essentially. But then why aren't they investing? Why do they fight these policy mandates and continue to really double down on gas guzzling vehicles?
I mean, it's a competition between short-term profits and sort of the long-term trajectory of the market. The CEO is going to get paid based on the quarterly changes in the stock price and not what happens in 10 years probably to the company.
Yeah.
They're going to make a lot more money from selling an inefficient large pickup truck or SUV. You're going to pay more in fuel, but the automaker doesn't care about that.
Yeah. So it's short-term thinking. I guess it's a classic conundrum for businesses facing changing technologies. Invest in the new technology at less profit or stick with the old dying technology and keep making money. Ken, Alex, I want to ask you about Greg's point about a state of emergency. You mentioned Governor Newsom could do so. Is that right? You were Governor Brown's climate policy advisor. What tools would you like to see Newsom use to try to combat what the federal government is doing right now?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. So state of emergency in California, the authority is quite different than it is for the federal government. We've seen Trump really use, and I would say misuse, the idea of a statement of emergency. And the Supreme Court has so far let him get away with it. He has very extensive authority as president using those emergency declarations, including around tariffs. In California, the emergency declaration authority is fairly different. It has to be very specifically identified. What is the emergency? It generally has to have a fairly direct and short term. And then there are significant limits on even that emergency authority and how the governor can use it. So I think it's not necessarily a bad idea, and there may be some authorities that the governor can use through that kind of a declaration, but they would be short term. What I'd like to see is not necessarily an emergency declaration, but a little more extensive direction for how California is going to respond to the cutbacks and the pullbacks and all of these different federal policies that are undercutting California's efforts and leadership on climate more broadly. I think on electric vehicles, the governor could really identify an individual or individuals in the governor's office to be the point person for expanding electric vehicle infrastructure, for looking at technology possibilities around batteries, and for really making it a huge focus of what the state needs to do to move forward on climate change more broadly. As was noted, I think by Emily, transportation is the biggest source of greenhouse gas emissions, and California is by far largest source is transportation. So I think what the governor could do, short of declaring emergency, is identifying a point person in the governor's office to really move forward on these issues.
All right. We're speaking with Ken Alex, Director of Project Climate at UC Berkeley Law School Center for Law, Energy, and the Environment, also former Senior Policy Advisor to California Governor Jerry Brown. And we're also talking to David Reichmuth, Senior Engineer in the Clean Transportation Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. We're discussing the future of zero-emission vehicles here in California, given federal rollbacks and policies to undermine the electric vehicle market in particular. This is Your Calls One Planet series. I'm Ethan Elkind, and we'd love to hear from you if you drive an electric vehicle, if you're concerned about these policies, if you have ideas for what California can be doing in response. Go ahead and drop us a line. We're at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email us at yourcall@kalw.org. And we have an email in from Lawrence Rhodes, who writes, battery tech is advancing rapidly. Charging time and range is improving, and the price of an EconoBox electric and gas vehicle is at parity, with electric to be radically less expensive to purchase and operate. Economics will solve the problem with the side benefit of clean air. David Reichmuth, what's your response there? How important is ongoing policy support, given what Lawrence writes, which I think is accurate, that we're really on the cusp of seeing some major improvements in battery performance? I mean, nothing revolutionary potentially, but just steady improvements and steady decreases in prices with every year that passes. And especially as we see China figure out how to make these vehicles incredibly cheap, how important is ongoing policy support?
Yeah, I mean, I think those are good points. And, you know, definitely we're seeing you know, the cost of EVs come down. There's more options available. But, you know, what I look at is sort of like, not will the transition happen, but how quickly can the transition happen? I think that is the key question. If you talk to the automakers, if you look at sort of the trajectory, it's clear that we will be making a transition to electric vehicles. The question is sort of how long does that take? And if you look at where we are with air pollution in the state, if you look at where we are with climate pollution and the damage from climate change already, we don't really have the time to sort of just wait for a, you know, for this transition to happen over a 30-year period. We need to accelerate that transition as quickly as possible. And that's where these policies, both regulations and incentives, play a role, is sort of making sure that we stay on that transition and accelerate that transition. And we were on that pathway, and there's now some significant roadblocks. Tools have been taken away from California by the Congress and the Trump administration, but that means that we need to take bold action in California to try to, we can't put back all the incentives, but we can definitely put back some. We can make new air pollution regulations. That'll take time, but we can also try to hold car companies accountable. And the state needs to be bold and creative about how they do that.
You know, we've talked about a number of the federal rollbacks here. One thing we haven't really spent a lot of time discussing, and Ken, I want to ask you about this, is a vote that Congress took to essentially repeal the ability of California to set a zero emission vehicle mandate on the automakers. Congress used a relatively obscure law known as a Congressional Review Act to invalidate EPA granting California the authority to set more aggressive zero emission vehicle standards on the automakers. So Ken, can you just talk about what happened there, what's at stake, and what you think is the future of this policy, given what we saw Congress do?
Right. So you mentioned the Congressional Review Act. Congress has the authority to undo any regulation within a certain short period of time after that regulation is promulgated. And so what Congress did here, I think ultimately will be found to be illegal if the courts review it. So Congress said that the determination that California's proposal to have a limit on sales of non-zero emission vehicles, basically internal combustion engine vehicles, by 2035 requires a waiver from US EPA under the Clean Air Act. And so California sought that waiver. That waiver was originally granted by the Biden administration. And then Congress said, hang on, under the Congressional Review Act, that's a rule, a regulation, we can undo it. They voted on it on pretty much party lines, Republican vote, sent it to Trump. Trump signed it, and that ended the proposal from California. However, it seems very clear from a legal perspective that the waiver is not a rule that can be reviewed under the Congressional Review Act. Mm-hmm. The problem is that there's also a provision in the Congressional Review Act that says that actions by Congress under that law are not reviewable by courts. So this is a very complicated legal situation. There is probably a way for the court to review the action. If the court is able to review the action, I think it's pretty clearly outside of Congress's authority. But regardless, all this legal brouhaha is really making it much more difficult for California to enforce its rule that no combustion engines could be sold in California market after 2035. So the state's going to have to find some other mechanisms.
Yeah. Well, Ken, let's talk about other mechanisms then. I mean, what could possibly replace the zero emission vehicle mandate while all this litigation is going forth? I mean, our colleague Ann Carlson at UCLA Law School has basically said that this opens all these rollbacks to the federal level now opens the door for California to take really aggressive action on zero emission vehicles. It's sort of an unintended consequence, I think, for the Trump administration, that if the federal government is going to basically step back from regulation, whether it's fuel economy or greenhouse gas standards, that now opens the field for states to take this on. They're no longer preempted. Do you agree with that? And, you know, what else would you want to see the state do now in the wake of all these attacks from the federal government?
Yeah, it's a very complicated legal set of issues because, as we've noted, it's going to take some time, some years potentially, for this new proposed non-rule, the withdrawing of the Endangerment Act, endangerment finding. It'll take years for that to come to fruition. What happens during the interim period, if that endangerment finding is in place? Can California claim that there's no regulation? I think that's a difficult issue for the courts to work through, but there may be some other possibilities here. So for example, California has all kinds of interests in having a electrical grid that operates 24/7 in a reliable way. And one of the things that electric vehicles bring to the table is the potential to have two-way bidirectional charging, it's called. There are situations where a whole bunch of electric vehicles could be plugged back into the electrical grid to make sure that it runs reliably at times of high energy usage. Well, that's a huge interest of the state that has very little or nothing to do with air emissions and the federal government's interest in controlling emissions. So there may be some different ways to think about incentives for electric vehicles or requirements that electric vehicles be sold in the state that are separate and apart from air emissions, which is where the federal government has its primary authority.
And David Reichmuth, do you have any thoughts about maybe a proposal like that or other ideas for what you would like to see states like California do now in response to these federal attacks?
Yeah. So, I mean, first off, California is going to sue and is going to make about the Clean Air Act rules. It's going to make new regulations on vehicles that will require approval from a future EPA. But Ken's right. At the same time, we have to be taking these actions that aren't constrained by the Clean Air Act. And in terms of the electric vehicles being part of our energy system in California, I mean, I think that's a key, that is a key mechanism where we could maybe have the state take action. We just did a study at the Union Concerned Scientists earlier this year looking at how electric vehicles can support the electricity grid. And we found that just on transmission and generation alone, there's a potential for billions of dollars per year of savings from the managing the charging of EVs and having EVs provide power back to the grid at the times of highest load. And so there is this ability for the state to unlock billions of dollars of savings that could potentially go to electric ratepayers everywhere in the state if we had those vehicles. And so that is a way that the California, I think, could look at ensuring that we have those vehicles to unlock the a clean, affordable, and reliable electricity grid.
And David, I also wanted to ask you about price impacts of all of these moves at the federal level. The U.S. Energy Information Administration, EIA, which collects and analyzes energy data, showed that Biden-era policies that were adopted by the end of 2024 would have dramatically brought down the cost of gasoline as more consumers are driving electrics, hybrids, more fuel-efficient vehicles. And it's challenging to predict what was going to happen now going forward, but by making vehicles less fuel efficient, by reducing the ability for people to afford electric vehicles or access electric vehicles, demand for gasoline is likely to go up, which seems likely then to increase prices. And with all this talk about how the election last year was so much about rising prices and inflation, what are you thinking at this point about how price impacts might play out and what that might mean for policy going forward?
Yeah, and when you're looking at the price impacts, one is that, I mean, we're taking away the incentives on EVs, and so that's going to make it in the short term harder for people to buy an EV. But when you look at the fuel prices, I think, as I mentioned, adding EVs, if we add EVs in the right way, if we have smart charging, if we have potentially bidirectional flow of electricity from those vehicles, we can put downward pressure on electricity prices in the state. And we know that there's issues with the supply of gasoline in the state, with gasoline refineries closing, our limited ability to import gasoline from other places in the nation, means that we really do, for our economic stability in this state, to try to transition away from gasoline to electricity. It's you know, we need to do it for the environment, we need to do it for climate, but it's also going to be produce a stronger economy in the state and more affordability in the state.
And David, I have to ask you, for anyone listening who is considering getting an electric vehicle, with the tax credit now essentially killed by this vote on the tax bill that Republicans took last month, what is the state now of tax credits? What would you tell anyone who's considering getting an electric vehicle?
So the tax credits are going to expire in September. So I think what we're going to see is, and what we are seeing is, you know, right now is, you know, dealerships, manufacturers are looking to get vehicles out before that tax credit expires. I don't know what we're going to see post the tax credit. I think that we hopefully will see some level of state incentives fill in some of the gaps. We're not going to be able to fill in the entire, you know, backfill the entire amount of the federal tax credit, but there may be some ability for the state to target incentives for some vehicles. But it's really going to be uncertain times, in especially as we get to past September, of what availability looks like.
So if you're interested in getting a vehicle, September is the last month of the availability of the federal tax credit. Ken, Alex, we're almost out of time. I'm going to give you the last word. What are you hoping might happen next year? What are you tracking? What's on your sort of near-term wish list?
Well, we'll see how the litigation goes. I think that California needs to really renew its leadership. And I think we'll be watching the governor's race as it develops over the next year very closely to see where the candidates are and ensuring that California is really in a primary position on electric vehicles coming in 2026.
Yeah, big leadership change coming up in the state in the campaign next year. Well, that's all the time we have for the show. I want to thank you both so much for joining us. Ken Alex, Director of Project Climate at UC Berkeley Center for Law, Energy, and the Environment. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And David Reichmuth, Senior Engineer in the Clean Transportation Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. Thank you for joining us on Your Calls One Planet series.
Thanks. Thanks, Ethan.
And that's our show. Your Call is produced at KALW in San Francisco. You can listen to our past shows on our website via kalw.org and click on news. We're also on iTunes and social media. Do email any show ideas or feedback to yourcall@kalw.org. Malihe Razazan produced today's show. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Ethan Elkind. It's Your Call.